You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com. The show will begin shortly.
It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time. Over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Your phone number, 201-939-4513. Or if you prefer to join the conversation on Twitter, you can go to hashtag GiantsChat. And boy, is there a lot to talk about. I hope everybody took the time to go to Giants.com and take a listen to the press conferences that took place yesterday. Tom Coughlin up first, then Jerry Reese, and then the real whammy. Giants co-owner, president and CEO John Mara took the podium and had a whole lot to say for about 17 full minutes. I suggest if you haven't watched it, you guys go and watch it. It was great stuff. And Lance, I guess we have to start, which I think was probably the most powerful statement of the day, and it was the one by the Giants co-owner and president and CEO John K. Mara, and that was the offense is broken. And it's something we've talked about on this show all week long. In fact, listening to John Mara's press conference, you would think he's one of the callers to the show all year long, because he said a lot of the same stuff we and a lot of the other calls have been saying over the course of the season. And a lot of people have taken his statement, the offense is broken, to mean that Kevin Gilbride, the Giants offensive coordinator, might be in some danger.
Yeah, he also touched on the fact that he was questioning why Jarrell Jernigan, it took 3 years for the team to finally realize that he can make some plays. So there were multiple references to the fact that the offense has had its fair share of issues, not just this season, but dating back to the latter stages of last season.
Though in fairness to Kevin Gilbride, in terms of the Jarrell Jernigan situation, Jernigan was also rarely healthy over the first 2 years of his career. He was often hurt. And quite frankly, when he was given the opportunity to play, either in the preseason or even in the regular season, doing special teams, he did very little to show he deserved to be on the field. So even in his limited opportunities, he didn't show a whole lot. Maybe for Jarrell Jernigan, coming out of a spread offense in Troy, it actually took him 2 years to figure this whole thing out and get to where he was today. I don't think if you would have given him this opportunity a year ago, he would have been able to put up the type of production that he did.
Well, and I also think that there wasn't the opportunity. I mean, he did get on the field at times, but you had a number of reliable wideouts who were healthy that you could turn to time and time again.
But in the preseason, he's had plenty of opportunities, as it has done very little with it. Granted, it's been with the backup quarterback, so maybe that has something to do with it. I'll buy that. But even in the preseason, he hasn't done a whole lot with his opportunities.
Well, I took away a bigger picture statement than what John Mara said, even though he basically talked about Jernigan. I think the point he was making is that the Giants need to do a better job getting their young players in games so that they can evaluate them much earlier and then determine whether or not they deserve a spot on the 53-man roster.
And I think that's a good point for a couple different reasons. One, you roll out your young guys to see what they can do, and I guess that means John Mara might be willing to lose with these young guys if they don't perform well, because that's part of the trade-off there. If you play young guys and they do stupid things, you get turnovers, you get mistakes, you lose football games. So that's part of it. The other part of it, I think, is that why is it taking these young guys so long to be ready to play? Because the coaching staff isn't not – they're not playing these guys just for the heck of it. They're not playing them because they haven't shown in practice that they're ready to play. There's been plenty of young guys on this roster – that have played earlier in their career. Prince Amukamara, for example. Linval Joseph, for example. Jonathan Hankins, when they needed him to be called upon this year, has stepped in and played. Marcus Kuhn last year stepped in pretty quickly and played for this team. When Jaquan Williams got drafted, he had a fairly significant role in his rookie year. Go back to 2007. We know how well those draft picks did their first couple years in the league. In 2008, Kenny Phillips and Terrell Thomas had very big roles earlier in their career. But you got to wonder why, and keep in mind, a lot of those guys I mentioned are drafted first and second round. That has not been the case for the guys drafted in rounds 3, 4, 5, and 6. And that, to me, was the second most important thing Mr. Mara spoke about in terms of missing on too many draft picks, especially in the middle rounds.
And he didn't hold back in admitting that. He said that they need to do a better job in terms of their draft game plan and getting guys to come in and immediately make an impact. And Michael Cox is another guy you can throw in there who you want to at least evaluate moving forward to determine or not whether he deserves a spot. Eric Hermann, for example, wasn't activated to the roster until the last game of the season. So, you know, you got to see what you have so then you can determine whether it's worth even investing in them moving forward. I think that's what he was at least alluding to. And it was kind of funny because when he mentioned things like the offense is broken and questioned why it took so long for Jernigan to all of a sudden take advantage of his reps, it was like synchronized swimming in the auditorium because every reporter, I think, either turned to their phone or put the pen down on paper. You knew that was the money quote from the press conference.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Of course, he also went on to say he believes Jerry Reese is the right guy to lead this team back. Faith in him in terms of a general manager. He also expressed faith in the scouting department. Thinks he, I believe the quote was, I believe we have some of the best scouts in the NFL. I assume that would also carry over to the rest of the front office, whether you're talking about the Mark Ross, the director of college scouting, and over to the pro personnel. He seemed to be very effusive of his praise of those guys in terms of their ability as individuals and even the process of making picks. And this is where I got confused a little bit, where if you have to do better making these selections, but the people doing it are all doing a great job and the process is right, where are the mistakes being made? I think that's what kind of needs to be figured out, and that's what they're going to try to figure out in these organizational meetings over the next few days. They're going to talk about the coaching staff. They're going to talk about process in terms of the front office, in terms of drafting people, in terms of bringing people in as free agents. Because obviously, in all three categories, and Jerry Reese made that point in his press conference, how blames on the coaches, players, and in terms of upper management, that they're going to look at all these things and try to figure out what's going wrong. Because 4 out of 5 years without making the playoffs certainly is below the standards of the New York Giants.
Well, he also, though, commended Jerry Reese for the risks he's taken in years past. Says that he wants Jerry to be continually aggressive in his strategy when it comes to the draft or even trying to bring in some free agents. And the other thing that I also took away from what John Mara mentioned, because I know we got a number of calls yesterday saying that they want the Giants to be aggressive this offseason, bring in maybe, quote-unquote, some big names. But John Mara put that to rest because he said, we're not going to shake things up in free agency just for the sake of shaking things up in free agency, because then you wind up putting yourself in a position where you don't have enough financial flexibility in years moving forward. So I think that they're going to do their due diligence in doing their homework. That doesn't mean that they're going to make a huge splash this offseason.
And I think it was Len that said it yesterday, and I think this is reflective in what John Mara said. When you get somebody in free agency, especially a big name, inevitably you're overpaying for them. You're paying them more than what their actual value is in terms of percentage of the salary cap, and I think that's something that the Giants want to avoid.
And there's no reason to go out and do that. I think that you need to do more better during the course of the draft, meaning that you've got to bring in talent through rounds 3 through 7, and we can't hammer that home enough. And if that means that Jerry shouldn't take as many risks moving forward, perhaps that's the new game plan.
And talk about the risk. I think Marvin Austin is one of those risks. He's a guy that didn't play his entire senior year. You draft him anyway, and look what happens. Quite frankly, another guy I think is probably somewhat of a risk is probably DeMontre Moore. He's a guy that dropped from the first round all the way to the third round, and a lot of concerns of exactly how serious he is about football, and he'll have a chance to dispel, I think, a lot of those fears coming up next year to see how serious he takes the offseason program, working out, getting ready for the season. But look, the bottom line is that, and John Mara talked about it, the number one thing you have to fix personnel-wise, and we've talked about the coaches now, the front office, let's talk about the personnel. He mentioned the offensive line, first and foremost. And he said before the year he was worried about the offensive line's depth. And again, that's reflective in the inability to draft people in the middle round to be effective backups, and he brought that up as well. But next year, I mean, right now, under contract, you have Will Beatty, who's coming off a broken leg, and who knows what else if tests reveal anything, any other damage in terms of his injury.
Though they are confident he will return.
They are confident he'll be ready for next season. That's correct. You have Justin Pugh over at right tackle. Then you have Brandon Mosley under contract. And that's pretty much it. Boots a free agent. Deal might retire. Snee might retire.
Brewer will be under contract.
And Brewer's under contract, yep, too. And David Boss technically is under contract, but they're not going to bring him back at a salary cap number, nor are they Chris Snee. So those are things they're going to have to work out, but they are going to have to fill up starting positions and backup positions on the offensive line.
And based on the results that were presented this season, I can't argue with the fact that that's got to be a huge priority. But it's got to start with the draft, because I don't think John Mara is of the viewpoint that they're going to go out and they're going to take the two biggest name free agents who are offensive linemen, throw a lot of money at them, and think that that's going to patch up the holes. I think they need to bring in some free agents because you need some more veteran leadership. I don't think you can get away with just putting a bunch of rookies out there, let's say next to Will Beatty and Kevin Booth, if you choose to bring him back.
And I'm sure that's going to make a lot of Giant fans angry, and that's not to say the Giants are going to not use their $20 to $30 million in cap space they'll likely have this offseason. This is that they're going to use it wisely. They're going to spend it where they think they can get the most bang for their buck, and they're not going to bring in names for the sake of bringing names, which is the right way to do things. Again, they're going to improve the team. They're going to use their resources, folks, but that doesn't mean you're going to get the top offensive lineman at that particular position. You'll get good players, just maybe not the guys that are going to bring in the $25 million guaranteed.
Well, look at the free agents that they brought in this offseason, John. I would say two of the guys that had the biggest impact weren't necessarily big names, Cullen Jenkins and Mike Patterson. Yet, they helped stop the run this season and helped them really bring them up in the rankings. So you could get away with bringing in maybe middle-tier names, and you could get good production out of
them. Heck, they traded a seventh-round, a conditional draft pick, a late-round draft pick for John Beeson. Look what that turned into. Tremaine McBride ended up being a very valuable offseason free agent signing. Nobody knew who he was this offseason, and that is not overstating things one bit. People had no idea who he was. So you're right. These names that aren't big turn out to be big-time players. So we'll see what happens. A ton else to say, guys. I got a full bank of calls. I got a lot of personnel stuff to talk about. So let's get to the phone calls. We'll try to sprinkle in some of the other stuff from yesterday as we go along here with the phone calls. Let's start with Ethan in Maryland first. Ethan, what's going on?
Hey, how are you?
What's going on, E?
Not much. Well, first I want to talk about how yesterday Mara, at his press conference, said the offense was in total pieces. You know, to me, does that mean Gilbride's out? Because it seems like Mara and Tisch want him to be fired, but Coughlin does not want him to be fired.
Well, I think this will be a very interesting few days, and I would be thrilled to be a fly in the wall in those meetings to see what's said, because I'm sure there's going to be a give and take here, because like you said, John Mara was very unhappy yesterday, and everybody else in this building is unhappy about it too, and everybody knows that's watched any Giants this year that the offense was the source of all their difficulties. So I'm sure they're going to have a long discussion with Coach Coughlin, and I'm sure Coach Coughlin is going to defend Kevin Gilbride to a T. And if I was Coach Coughlin, I'd do the same thing too. You have to back up your coaches in that position, and they'll decide what's best for the organization. But I do believe, just based on what the owner said yesterday, that is an open question right now that we won't know the answer to probably for a couple days.
I mean, it wouldn't be a stunning development, Ethan, if changes occurred to the offense, whether it be personnel or coaches, given what he threw out there. And I think, piggybacking off of what John mentioned, they're going to have their fair share of meetings moving forward. And that's why everyone said they want Tom Coughlin back, but nobody wanted to jump to conclusions, because it's only fair to speak to Tom Coughlin and lay out, listen, we want this coach back, we want to make a change here, so that this way Coughlin can assess the situation and determine what he wants to do moving forward.
And I heard also, you know, in how Mara was saying, if Coughlin disagrees with firing Gilbride, could that result in maybe Coughlin not being back, or no?
Honestly, there's no way for us to know the answer to that question. I know that the ownership is very happy with Tom Coughlin. They believe he's the perfect representation of the Giants. They believe he's the right guy to lead this team. So I think it's more of a question, is Tom Coughlin willing to step down if they force him to make a move on some of his assistants that he doesn't want to make a move on? I think that's the better question you need to ask yourself.
Right. And also, for the offensive line, Justin Q, he played right tackle this year. I believe he plays right guard as well, correct?
He actually played left tackle at Syracuse.
Oh, okay, I thought he would be better as a right guard. You know, he was not as big as arm length as other tackles in the league. So next year, do you think they would move him inside to right guard where David Deal played this year and either draft or sign a free agent at right tackle?
I think Justin Pugh's versatility gives him some freedom, but I don't understand why everybody wants to move Justin Pugh away from right tackle. After a rocky first month, he was extremely effective as a right tackle. They even ran better to the right side than they did to the left side. I don't see the urgency in moving Justin Pugh inside. I really don't. I don't care about his arm measurements. If he can block people, that's all I care about. I don't care how he does it.
Ethan, the other thing you need to take into consideration, you know, a lot of the issues with the offensive line this season is because they were moving guys around left to right. I think you need some stability, and appreciate the phone call, Ethan. So I wouldn't necessarily have the urge to move Pugh around. And if you're going to move Pugh around, you better make that decision early because you want to give him an entire full offseason to adjust to a new position, especially if now he's going to be playing next to new guys. See, the one thing that worked well for Justin Pugh this season, keep in mind, he played next to Deal for about 95% of this season. Why do you think Beattie and Brewer sometimes struggled? Because they were playing next to different guys 95% of the season. You need structure with your O-line.
Remember, early in the season when he struggled, that's when Deal wasn't there. That's when Snead started in that spot. They rotated him out. Then Deal, if you remember, fractured his thumb, which, by the way, he's going to have surgery on again this offseason because he re-injured it. And we'll see what Deal will do in terms of his retirement.
And he hinted at that on the radio broadcast in the press conferences.
He also hinted at it talking in the locker room. So that's an issue. We don't know about Chris Snee. One other, I thought, interesting nugget in the locker room yesterday. Akeem Nix, remember, spoke last Friday. We talked about that on the show a little bit. And he was very adamant that he wanted to be a member of the Giants next year. But we talked about economics. And this is where I think the real kink in the machinery comes in. Speaking to the media yesterday, the one quote from Akeem Nix that I thought was very telling was that I still consider myself a number one wide receiver. And if you still consider yourself a number one wide receiver, do you know what that means? You're going to want number one wide receiver money. And I don't think the Giants are going to want to pay Akeem Nix number one wide receiver money coming off the 2 years he's had.
And considering how negotiations went with Victor Cruz, where it wasn't as if they just threw him money automatically, the Giants are not in the mood, and I don't think their perspective is just because a guy views himself as a number one wideout, we throw him that type of money.
And obviously a much different situation considering Akeem Nix unrestricted when Victor Cruz last year was under the control of the Giants, and this is where it becomes a problem because the Giants play hardball with Akeem Nix. Nix can just go get another offer. Victor Cruz couldn't, well, he could do that last year.
But it was limited.
Yeah, because he had to, you know, send draft picks if you signed with the other team and all that stuff. Other teams probably weren't going to be willing to do that. But Akeem Nix can just go to another team and say, nah, sorry, Giants, I got $8 million a year from this guy. Do you want to match that? And then all of a sudden, you know, Akeem Nix, and I get it, this is his first opportunity to be a free agent out of his rookie contract. He's going to want to get paid. And if I'm Akeem Nix, I'm going to want to get paid in that situation as well. The shelf life of an NFL player is extremely short. When you have the chance to get your money, you got to get your money. And I'd be very surprised if that money lines up from both sides at the same time.
However, with that being said, John Mara was asked about Akeem Nix's play this season.
Yep.
They asked him about whether or not he was disappointed that Akeem Nix did not put up his usual numbers. And John Mara talked about how he felt Nix was not fully healthy even throughout the course of this season.
Which was interesting.
Did not blame the shortcomings on Nix, but said there were a lot of other factors that led to why he didn't get into the end zone and so forth.
Right. He made the point that it's hard to single out Akeem Nix when so many other players on the offense struggle. And he was more part of the unit struggles than it was his individual struggles. But I don't get this whole Akeem Nix health thing. Why is it such a mystery? You got John Mara saying that Akeem Nix wasn't healthy the whole year. And, you know, quite frankly, he didn't look healthy the whole year. You didn't see that explosion. You didn't see that separation. So I understand where the Giants owner and CEO was coming from. I certainly do. But then you got Akeem Nix in the locker room, was asked straight up, Akeem, did you play hurt this year? No, I was 100%. And at this point, Akeem Nix has no reason to lie. I don't get
it. Something's not adding up.
There's always something missing with that guy. You never know what's going on.
Well, and that's why I would question investing so much money in him, John, because let's say he wasn't healthy. Let's say what John Mara said has some substance.
Which wouldn't be a surprise, considering he's been hurt his entire career.
Correct. So that's two straight seasons where you've had lingering injuries and the numbers have dipped.
And leg issues, too, by the way, for a receiver.
Do you want to press your luck for a third straight year with that?
No. Not paying him number one wide receiver money. No way.
Especially when you have other needs across the board, and not just on offense, but defense too.
Now, for our next call, Lance, I want you to get out your calculator. I want you to get out your pen and paper. I want you to get ready to write some stuff down and do some serious mathematical calculations. Our good buddy, NYG Cap Central, Marwan, joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's going to crunch some numbers for us and give us the lowdown on the Giants' salary cap situation in 2014. Marwan, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. It's an interesting call, and usually I just go online and do my thing, but I figured I'd give a call considering what we were, the topic was yesterday.
Yeah, happy to hear
from you. Everyone's going to be interested. Oh, thank you. Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. They've got a, you know, it's interesting what's going to happen because you've got, you know, starting with Snead, you know, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to purge the veterans, especially after a year like this. It was going into the year. It was a, you know, it was a calculated gamble. If you just look at the numbers, it's basically reading tea leaves. If you just look at this cap stuff, all the 1 year contracts Lance was always referencing, and he was spot on about that. That was done with a reason in mind, so that there could be an exit strategy away from this 1 year. They gambled in more than one sense when they kept Snee on the team, considering his injury history. But it was calculated. It wasn't done haphazardly, unlike, you know, I hate to bring up the Cowboys, but if you look at them, they're going to be facing something that's going to be pretty ugly in 2015.
Right.
Next year, they'll be fine. They'll do their usual song and dance, restructure this guy, restructure that guy, but that's not what's happening here. Here you've got Snead, who's going to be gone. You take off 7.25. I'm getting these figures from overthecap.com, and I've just used that stuff. Snead, 7.25, that's off the books. They've got right now, if you look at the amount of contracts, about 37 or 38, I'm not sure which, but 37 to 38 guys on the books, and that's about 10.3 mil in free space. If you add that to Snead, if you add Snead to that total, 7.25, and you've also got two contracts that are voidable years. Voidable years are tricks, basically. They're just tricks so that you could spread out the dead money hit for a player over a couple of years. You know, like, for example, the contract Myers signed, that was they didn't really have a lot of money to work with, so what they did was they signed basically, it was a four-year contract, but underneath the surface, it was a one-year deal plus three more consecutive one-year deal, so that there could be quick exit strategy away from him.
I know what a lot of teams do. They will put these final years on these contracts with no money there, so they can renegotiate and move that money back.
Right. They push the money back. Let's say, you know, the OC contract last year, the year before that. Pardon me. When that was redone with the same principle in mind, and it gave OC a little bit more money, and then in exchange. What the Giants did, they bit the bullet and they took $1 million cap hit and did just about $1 million cap hit in dead money this year.
Right.
The Webster situation, similar. You've got about $1 million, you know, Myers and Webster, basically they're not going to be here. They've got voidable years. They're gone. The cap savings is the primary and secondary concern here. Cap savings for Myers, $3.25 million, and you add $1 million for Webster, it's about $4.25. Those three and Snee, they total from what I've got here, and then that $10.3 million in available space, that's about $21.8 million, right there under the cap.
So basically, they're going to have around $22 million, and that's before dealing with a potential on-shore role extension, and before potentially moving around some of Eli Manning's cap money.
Exactly. And then don't forget, there's also these numbers that I'm basing. They're based off of the $126.3 million. Salary cap.
And that could go up.
That could be adjusted based on the meetings.
Up.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. So and that's projected probably go up to 128 mil. I don't want to say for sure because we don't know yet, but when the meetings are held in February, March, they might go up, just like they do every year. So look for that, during that time, look for the slight increase there. So, you can bump it up, let's say, to 23 mil just for the, sake of argument right there. Let's just keep things nice and round. People like round numbers, so I don't blame them. You got 23 mil right there. Then you have to also keep in mind that there's going to be restricted free agents.
Right.
Tenders are assigned based on first, second, original round tenders. And for, guys who are rookie free agents that weren't drafted, guys who weren't drafted, like Basinger.
The Will Hills of the world, too, right? Yeah.
He doesn't fit into this yet.
Yeah, not yet.
He'll
be next year, right? Yeah.
I believe so. As long as he keeps his nose clean.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, but you've got this year, you've got Hynoski, you've got Herzlick. I'll just toggle through my list right here. You got Hynoski, Herzlick, several guys. Let me just take a quick look at who I have here. But, those guys, what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to make an evaluation on who is most likely to be offered something from the outside. Hynoski, you might not even tender him.
Right.
You just might want to bring him back on a one-year qualifying minimum offer. Herzlick, same thing. Paysinger, you might want to give him an original round tender. It was about $1.3 million last year. It's a basically right of first refusal. I doubt he goes anywhere, but he's an excellent special teams guy, depth. Brewer, Jernigan. Well, Jernigan's earned himself a spot, you know, so his original round tender would be the third round.
So, in short, figure you have to put around, what, like $4 to $5 million aside for
exactly.
the tenders, and then do you also have to take out the draft pick money from that pool as well, or is that separate?
That will come into play later on with the draft, and you know, and I'll get into the June 1st rule as well. With the draft, what happens is a lot of people misunderstand what happens with the draft. Salary cap accounting rules change come the beginning of the new league year, which is March 11th. What happens at the top 51? Yesterday we saw eight. Yesterday was the first day that futures signings could
right.
be made. Future signings are basically, you know, on an accounting, you know, accounting speak, they're just for the 2014 year. But what you do is you get a head start. The first day that play teams are at, and then you can do extensions for 20 guys drafted and 2011 beginning yesterday as well. The first day that players can be cut is the day after the Super Bowl. So you're going to see a lot of activity then.
Right.
What's going to happen now, though, is you know, there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff going on. The situation is, you know, you're going to take a look at a lot of things. It's not something that's really simple. What's going to happen is as soon as the league year kicks in, the top 51 rule is in effect. What happens then is that only the top 51 contracts are counted. So, if you know, and then you guys know about the 90-man roster thing. I don't have to get into
right.
that. But rosters expand as the offseason progresses. And what happens is that, you know, as players fill up their rosters with, you know, camp invitees and guys like that, is that, you know, if you counted all of them, the cap number would just really go up. So what they do is in the offseason, they put the top 51 rule into effect just to save everyone a headache, you know. So it's a lot easier, you know, to keep track of that.
So basically the only guys you have to fit under the salary cap are the guys with the 51 highest salaries on your roster.
Exactly.
And that would include your draft class once they sign their contracts.
No.
It would not.
Here's the catch. It would only include, depending on where you're picking. Last year, the Giants, when the top 51 rule was in effect right around draft time, during draft time, only two players counted in the top 51 when they were drafted.
Interesting.
That was Justin Pugh and Jonathan Hankins.
Okay.
Everyone else that was available, and you notice the signings took place right away for many of the other guys, you know, unless there was an agent dispute. It's just those first two. And then you have something else called salary displacement. What happens is that you don't simply look at the cap values are assigned, basically. So you and I could almost negotiate these contracts for these players.
Right.
There's not really much to negotiate. You've got salary splits for guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. Fourth round, you've got salary split possibilities for 1 year, maybe instead of two. Guys in the fifth, sixth, and seventh have salary splits for two. Their cap numbers go down if they go on injured reserve. That's why you saw the Giants with Cooper Taylor on injured reserve at the end of the year when they were really close to the cap threshold instead of guys that didn't have splits. They're very valuable in that sense.
All right, Marwan, and then very quickly, once we get to that June 1st date, the reason you would want to designate somebody a post-June 1st cut is that you can spread then whatever dead money you have from that cut over both this year's and next year's cap, and you split it between the 2 years, right? That's why you would want to designate them a post-June 1st.
Exactly. That's why it's attractive for a guy like Boss to be on that list. Now, you need to use this judiciously, of course. I don't want to take up too much time, but I'll just get to Boss. You know, a guy like Snead, you can't do someone like Snead because he's got only 1 year. In order to qualify for a June 1st cut, you have to have at least 2 years left on your contract. So it's not as simple as some people say, oh, June 1st cut. No. You have to have at least 2 years left on your deal.
Okay.
Boss has, you know, has that. So what you would do with him is that you would have cap savings of $5 million as opposed to $1.75 million. So that's more money to work with. And then you could use that to sign your draft picks. Now, signing the draft picks won't really cost a lot. You could sign, you know, all of them, almost all of them, except your first and second round draft picks, without the top 51, when the top 51 rule is in effect, without it affecting your cap. But those guys, you have to be a little bit careful of. But it's not going to be an issue. The draft is in, you know, second week. What is it, May 8th this year or 9th or something?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So Boss is really the ideal candidate for that. And maybe Kiwi, depending on if the Giants bring back Tuck or not. team might be a candidate for that. So it's something that you use judiciously. And as a favor to players, as a courtesy, you could do something else. You can also release players at the beginning of free agency in March and designate them
right.
as post-June 1st cuts then. The Dolphins did this last year. You know, several teams did it. They did it with Dansby and the other linebacker, Burnett, and they found contracts right away. The catch is this, though, is that the money doesn't come off the books until June 2nd.
That's why you use that money to sign your draft picks.
Yeah, and that's when, you know, they can come to terms, you know, without really putting pen to paper before that. But, you know, just for, you know,
right.
accounting purposes, that's how it works. So, you know, they'll be in okay shape. And as John Mara said yesterday, you know, they're going to do things smartly. You know, there's no reason to rush. The first week of free agency is going to be crazy. That's when you really want to, you know, be careful and, you know, not stick your toe in the pool without really having a target. And the Giants have been smart in the past. You know, they signed Roll in 2010. They attacked right away. You know, they usually, you know, are surgically precise with who they go after during that first week. But then after that, you know, the market comes back to you, and it's a buyer's market now. You know, I mean, simply put, the way the cap constraints are working now, it's a buyer's market. That first week, you'll see some contracts that are, you know, eyebrow raising, but after that, it'll come down.
Marlon, appreciate the call, bud.
Yeah, anytime.
Hey,
I'll,
good stuff.
Try
and
to do this a little bit more often.
Yeah, definitely give us a call back when we get closer to free agency, and we'll break down some of the guys out there and some of the salary ramifications. All right, bud?
Well, it's a pleasure speaking to you both. Take care, Lance.
Have a good one.
All right.
So, Lance, you got everything
I did
squared away now?
Yep. Well, we knew that they were going to have some options this offseason.
Right.
It's just a matter of right now the Giants need to assess the situation.
So we're looking at, depending
not
on
cut
what,
anybody yet. At
right, depending
point.
On what they do with Roll, et cetera, you're probably looking around $25 million to spend in the offseason. Remember, now with the new rule, too, if you don't spend some of that money, that cap space will roll over into the next season.
And I think that the Giants are not going to, as I mentioned off the top, they're not going to go out and make a big splash in the offseason by bringing in just a big name for the sake of bringing in a big name. They're going to be very wise about that. And you look at what they did last season, they were fairly wise about that too. It's not as if they locked up a guy for 5 or 6 years. They gave out a lot of one-year contracts, as Marlon said, so that this way that they would have an opportunity to have even more flexibility this year.
And if you guys have any cap questions, at NYG Cap Central, we'll answer anything you got. Marlon's very good with the cap stuff. Let's go back to the phones and go to Maurice in Montclair, New Jersey. Maurice, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. That was pretty interesting from the last caller. That was some good stuff. But my question today is about what I heard the mayor raised in his press conference. When he spoke about Hakeem Nicks, he seemed to kind of, you know, back him up a little bit. And my question is, you know, since I hear him speaking that, you know, the offense as a whole wasn't that productive, if you look at Nicks' numbers, I believe he was only 104 yards away from 1,000 yards. Is that true?
Yeah, I think he finished with 896 yards. But keep this in mind, too. I mean, 1,000 yards for a receiver isn't that great of a number. I mean, to get to 1,000 yards over 16 games, you're basically averaging, 65 yards a game through the air. So while 1,000 yards is a good big number, it really doesn't indicate that you were that consistent or great of a wide receiver.
Okay, because, you know, I'm a huge Knicks fan, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Well, Mo, just look at it this way. Over 16 games, if you average 50 yards receiving a game, you're at literally 800 yards for the season. So Knicks averaged about 60 yards per game this year to get to around 900. So that's not a great number.
Plus, it's a pass-happy league, so, you know, everybody's numbers are fairly increased across the board.
And Victor Cruz had managed to have a great year, even though it was a down year for the offense, too. So you just have to wonder why Hakeem Nicks could have matched that.
Okay, and lastly, you know, how do you guys rank, you know, this draft class that just came in? Because I would hate to see, like, guys like Bomar, we had no business even drafting. I thought highly of Tyler Sash, and even Clint Sinems of the world that never really panned out. I looked at, you know, our draft since 07, and like John Merritt noted, there was a lot of misses. But does all the blame go on Jerry Reese? Because, you know, bringing guys like Beeson in, I figure that, you know, these are his moves, and, you know, he's made good moves. I don't think Lewis Murphy was, you know, a good move. But, you know, how do you guys rank that, this as fast, and, you know, do you still think that, like John Mara said, he's the right guy moving forward as far as Jerry Reese?
Well, I would say, first of all, it's way too early to judge this year's draft class. You simply haven't seen enough. Though the fact that Justin Pugh managed to start all 16 games as a rookie for the first time in a long time for the Giants, I think, is an extremely good sign. I think he's going to be, at the very least, a very solid player over the course of a long NFL career. I think Jonathan Hankins showed in spurts he could, you know, be a good run stopper in this league. But quite frankly, Lance, after the first two rounds, I don't think you know what you have. Ryan Nassib, a fourth-round pick, who knows? DeMontre Moore, when he was on the field, he made just as many mistakes as he made plays and was never able to make significant contributions, even in the limited defensive snaps he got. Michael Cox, beyond returning a few kicks, didn't show a ton. Cooper Taylor was hurt pretty much all year long. So I'm not sure how much you can really say about it. But, again, I think the top looks pretty good. But, again, the middle-round picks, I think it's a big incomplete.
Well, we have to see how the next year or two
it's
pan
too
out.
Early.
It's way too early. You can look at the other previous drafts, and I think that Mo was alluding to that, the fact that, you know, a lot of those third through seventh round picks have really turned out to not give the Giants much return. But to evaluate this 2013 draft class at this point, it's too early to tell. Because, number one, we don't even know how many guys are going to be able to hang around on this roster next season. You assume they're going to bring in some competition that's going to weed out some of the lower-tier players, but they would have probably liked to seen a little bit more out of this class, I think, from an immediate standpoint, outside of Justin Pugh and Hankins, as John mentioned, whether it be because there weren't as many opportunities or guys got hurt, you know, there weren't a lot of impact plays from that group.
And guys, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, real quick, Mo.
Okay, all right, so can you tell me, Rich Cyber, Chris Snee, Sean O'Hara, Kareem McKenzie, that nucleus and that group of guys, can you tell me who was drafted and who was brought in as free agencies? That's kind of all I have. I was kind of, you know, worried about that.
Yeah, Sean O'Hara and Kareem McKenzie were both brought in as free agents. Both guys, Kareem McKenzie was a mid-round pick, I believe, by the Jets.
And O'Hara
was an undrafted free agent. Richie Seibert was an undrafted free agent brought in by the Giants. David Deal was a fifth round pick.
Let's see.
Back in 2004, and who am I missing on that out of that group that he mentioned? Snee was a second round pick. So it's a pretty good mix, Mo, of guys on that offensive line. And Deal was a fifth round pick. And quite frankly, we talked about this in the offseason, 2003, perhaps one of the most valuable picks in terms of what he gave the team and where he was drafted over the past 15, 20 years.
Now, I'm looking through the drafts after Deal's year, rounds either 5, 6, 7, just to see if they've gotten some decent value out of that. I mean, Derek Ward was a 7th-round pick.
You know what? I think that's wrong, by the way. Are you on Pro Football Reference?
Yeah.
I've seen Derek Ward listed there on Pro Football Reference before. I don't think that's right. I looked it up.
Well, they do have 3 7th-round picks listed
for
2004.
Derek Ward was not drafted by the Giants, if memory serves me right. I think that's incorrect. And I've noticed that before on Pro Football Reference. So the bottom line is, again, like we talked about, Lance, the last really good 3rd-round pick the Giants had was Justin Tuck. That was back in 2005. So they got to do better in those middle rounds.
Ward is listed on a variety of websites.
Really?
So drafted by the Giants, 7th-round pick. Pick 235 in 2004. However, with that being said, the reason why I think there's some confusion, he was with the Jets on their practice squad in 2004.
So he never made the roster.
That would explain why
there, you go.
There is some confusion. Mod Bradshaw was a 7th-round pick.
Right.
So that was a good one. Then you go to 2008. They didn't get much of anything in rounds 4 through 6. 2009... Andre Brown was a 4th-round pick. Red Bomar, DeAndre Wright, Stoney Woodson rounded out that draft. Then you go to 2010, Dillard, Petras, Tracy, Dodge.
Yeah, see, but look, Wikipedia says Ward was selected by the New York Jets in the 7th round of the 2004 NFL draft, but never appeared in a game for him. He was signed by the Giants off the Jets practice squad on October 13th, 2004.
It's like every website has a different story.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I really don't think he was an actual 7th-round pick. I'm sure our Twitter people can give us for sure whether or not he was or not on hashtag Giants Chat. But I've noticed that on Pro Football Reference before, and I really don't think.
Yeah, they have
correct.
Him down there on Pro Football Reference. Is always a
oh
very
no, it's always
site.
Great, which is
I mean,
why
it's the encyclopedia.
Remember last year we did the Giants draft class challenge, and we were going through the draft classes, and I remember who I went to some type of authority, and they told me that was incorrect. I forget who it was.
I think it was Eisen, actually. It's unusual for a team to have 3 7th round picks.
201-939-4513. Back to our phones. You guys have been waiting patiently. AJ's in South Carolina. You're up next. AJ, good morning.
Good morning, John. I got a quick question for y'all.
Sure.
Brandon Myers, is he a free agent?
Well, Brandon Myers, as Marwan said earlier, he has technically a 4-year contract, but the last 3 years are basically for lack of. I won't get into the cap language for you, but it's basically non-guaranteed, and it's worth a decent amount of money. So they'll be able to release him, so he will be a free agent this season.
Do you think the Giants go find him back next year?
I think they're going to try to find a two-way tight end, either in the draft or free agency, that can block and catch.
That's all I want for the Giants, because they need a franchise tight end.
No, AJ, I agree. I think that besides the offensive line, to me, that's their second greatest need this offseason. They need to bring in a tight end that can be here for 5 or 6 years, get a continuity with Eli Manning, and not only catch passes, but also block. I want a two-way player at that position that's going to be here for a long time.
Me too. That's what I want. Who are free agent tight ends they got? Who are some free agents?
Well, Jimmy Graham's the most notable, but I don't think he's going to fit under the salary cap for the Giants. He's probably at the top of the list. Correct.
Cumberland's a guy that's a young guy that's out there. Chandler from the Bills is a guy, Lance, that you mentioned. There aren't a lot of big-name tight ends out there. Greg Olsen's a guy that's out there. He's probably your second biggest name after Jimmy Graham.
So you said Scott Chandler play for Bills?
Scott Chandler, correct. Yeah, the 6'7" tight end.
These play for the Giants, practice squad.
Say that again?
Did he just play for the Giants when he was in practice squad?
I think Chandler at one point was on the Giants roster. That's correct.
He was signed off the Cowboys practice squad on December 22nd, 2009, and then he was waived in September of 2010.
So he could block and catch too?
Look, Chandler is a lower-end type of tight end. He's not a great athlete. So
but he's got the size to block.
He does, but to me, I think the Giants need to find somebody in the draft then that's going to be here for a while. I'm tired of this revolving door at the tight end position. I want somebody that can be here and has the talent to secure the job for a long time.
My second question is it's about Real Beatty. He didn't do that good this year. Do you think the Giants are going to draft a left tackle in the first round?
Well, they got a lot of money tied up in Will Beatty, so I don't think it's that simple. Even if you bring in somebody in the draft, you're not going to take Will Beatty out of the equation. He's going to start next season, assuming he's healthy.
And the earliest you can let him go is, I think, after next season with his cap situation. And they're not going to bail on him yet. They 2 years ago, he only allowed 3 sacks the whole season. And if you draft the left tackle, then you're moving Beatty to right, then you got to move Pugh. And once again, you got that musical chair situation again, and you're not getting any continuity. So I think, depending on the severity of this injury, and we'll see what happens when he gets surgery and everything gets fixed and cleaned up, how healthy he is next offseason. But I still believe the Giants think he is a starting tackle for them next year. And frankly, that's what Jerry Reese said in his press conference yesterday.
Do you think he's going to bounce back next year?
It's hard to tell. I mean, you have to see how he heals up, how quickly he gets back for OTAs. I mean, it would just be guesswork. Lance and I aren't doctors.
I think, though, with a full offseason, assuming he could get healthy sooner than later, he talked about this even during the season, where during the offseason you like to maybe change up your strategy, change up your mechanics, as opposed to doing that from game to game.
And that's why not having an offseason might hurt him if he's hurt for much of it.
Correct.
I got one more question. I went on the internet. They're talking about Kevin Goodbye. Likely get fired.
Well, there's a lot of speculation right now, especially after what John Mara said, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning.
And it is just speculation right now.
There's some reports out there, and also people are interpreting John Mara's statement that the offense is broken. But just because he says the offense is broken, that's also talking about the players not performing at the levels that they had been in the past, such as guys like Will Beatty and Eli Manning.
And you haven't seen any, unidentified sources, people in the Giants organization, even NFL sources that are saying Kevin Gilbride's job is in danger. It's simply people analyzing and drawing conclusions from what John Mara said yesterday.
It's all interpretation of that one statement. That's why I said, when I was at the press conference yesterday, and John, telling you, every reporter, the minute he said offense is broken, you would think that was the hottest statement that was ever said this offseason already.
Yeah, you would have thought that they were announcing the end of, like, World War II.
My goodness, they jumped on that quote.
They really did.
And ran with it.
And the second one they jumped on was talking about the failures of draft picks in the middle rounds. I think those were really the two things that you got to. And then, of course, the personnel issues in terms of the offensive line. So, look, like we've been saying all year, and a lot of people have called in trying to put all the blame on one person, whether it's Gilbride, whether it's Eli, whether it's Jerry Reese, whether it's somebody else, Hakeem Nicks, whatever, there's plenty of blame to go around here. There are a lot of moving parts here that didn't work too well this season.
Here's the one thing that I'll say to Giants fans, and when you listen to Coughlin, Reese, and Mara at press conferences, you can only read into so much they say, but Mara is very forthright with the fan base.
Completely
he does
honest.
Not BS you. He was very open, I thought, you know, very well spoken in terms of him laying out his concerns about the team, and he answered every question, and he wasn't giving you the prototypical, you know, scripted answer. He was giving you quality answers that changes are going to be made, but he didn't want to say to the Giants fans, listen, that doesn't mean that we're going to take all 53 guys, get rid of them, and bring in 53 new guys. I think that, you know, you could read into what he said, but it wasn't just, you know, trying to throw clouds out there. There was substance in what he said yesterday.
It's funny. To me, John Mara sounded a lot yesterday like a very educated Giants fan that will call into this show. There was anger. He was upset. He listed all the problems. But at the same time, he mentioned all the mitigating factors to Eli Manning's poor play, to the offense being broken, to why some of the draft picks haven't worked out, such as the injury issues with Kenny Phillips and Terrell Thomas. He mentioned those guys. Chad Jones, obviously. Clint Sintem, guys like that. And he understands that it's not as simple as, oh, the offense stunk clean house. It's not that simple. And I think it has to be very heartening for a Giant fan to see that their owner feels their pain, A, cares about the team as much as they do, but also is intelligent enough and understands the game enough to not force quick, unrestrained, and foolhardy moves on this franchise that could hurt them long term.
I think what you could take away from what the Giants organization has done in the past compared to other teams, there's structure and there's planning. And it's not one of these types of organizations that just reacts for the sake of reacting.
Cowboys.
And there's a lot of other teams that you could throw out
Redskins.
There.
Redskins.
Or even another team that's located in this area, too.
That's a good point.
Got to be wise with your decisions. You can't all of a sudden have that quick knee-jerk reaction where you just all of a sudden feel, hey, we've got to blow this thing open because this was an awful season. There's a reason why there's been stability surrounding this organization. They haven't had every season where they've been able to post 12 wins, but there's been structure, and that helps you build continuity in this league.
I'll tell you, Lance, I just thought listening to that press conference, I really felt like I was listening to our callers in the morning. It sounded like the same exact stuff that we've been hearing all year. And I just think as a Giant fan, knowing you have an owner that is so in sync with everything, from understanding the problems with the team, to understanding the pains the fans are feeling, to understanding empty seats in the stadium are not a good thing, to understanding just every aspect of this organization, the fans, the team, the front office, the players, the personnel. If I was a fan, I'd just be very heartened by that and understanding that this guy gets it. And he's going to do everything he can in a smart way to get this team back on the right track.
And he's heard it from the fans, too, which he talked about at the press conference. He even joked that some people have said that they should get rid of him in terms of the structure and ownership of this team. So he's well aware. He's got his finger on the pulse of the fan base. He understands that a lot of people are unhappy.
I have a feeling those letters are supposed to get sent to James Dolan, and they just misaddressed them.
Yes,
and they got sent to the Timex before.
The U.S. Postal Service.
The Quest Diagnostics Training Center instead.
There's some issues with the U.S. Postal Service system. They're trying to work out the kinks, from what I hear.
201-939-4513. Oliver's in Jersey City. Oliver, good morning.
Morning.
How are you doing?
All right.
What do you got?
I got a question. You know, next year, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, the players' contracts are going to be expired, and they might transition to other teams. And the next thing you know is the draft.
Yep.
Like, what's our position like for next year?
Well, in terms of the draft, it's way too early right now, Oliver, to speculate about the draft. They got to get through free agency and determine what type of holes they want to patch up with free agents before they know exactly where they want to go via the draft. I mean, the draft's not going to be until May. There's going to be a lot of movement leading up to May.
We haven't had a combine yet, for goodness sakes, you know? We haven't had a combine yet. Let's slow the roll there. And look, Chaz, there's going to be a lot of changes. Excuse me, Oliver, there's going to be a lot of changes in terms of personnel, and they'll figure it out. But you're going to have a lot of changes, and maybe we'll know probably by the end of the week if we're going to have any coaching changes, whether in terms of coordinators or other offensive assistants. Because frankly, Lance, if the coordinator change is made on offense, which we'll see, you're probably going to have some position coaches get changed too. That's just my feel for it. It probably just won't be the one guy. It's probably going to be him and then a couple others.
Because if you want a new voice, then you need to change things at least across the board with respect to the offense.
And you want your new coordinator bringing a couple of his own guys.
So he's comfortable. However, with that being said, and once again, this is down the road of speculation.
Right.
I'm seeing somebody bring this up on Twitter. Bill, who also chimes in a lot, at @LI_GiantsFan, asking about Mike
Good
Sullivan.
Tweeter. Yeah.
Who was brought up in the press conference yesterday with respect to John Mara. For those of you unfamiliar, Greg Schiano was fired yesterday by the Tampa Bay Bucs. Mike Sullivan, the former Giants quarterbacks coach, was hired as the Bucs offensive coordinator. He was there the last two seasons under Schiano, helped Josh Freeman have a very good first year. Then they turned and they went the direction of Mike Glennon. And Mike Glennon also had a very good season as a rookie in this league. So, because of his ties to the Giants organization, in the event they do part ways with Kevin Gilbride, perhaps they would bring back a familiar voice in which Eli Manning has done well under his guidance.
I think only as a quarterback's coach. One of the things Bill mentioned online was maybe as an offensive coordinator. But you want to change your system. Mike Sullivan's system is Kevin Gilbride's system. So that's not going to make a lot of sense. But if you want to bring him in as a quarterback's coach, maybe I could see that. Because obviously he's very highly regarded here.
And there has been a lot of movement with respect to Eli Manning's quarterbacks coach over the last few seasons. Just to put it in perspective, he had Chris Palmer from 2007 to 2009. He had Sullivan for 2010-2011, and then now he has Sean Ryan for the last two seasons. So, you know, there has been consistency with Eli Manning, but now all of a sudden that you're seeing some movement in the downward direction, you wonder, does he need a voice that he's had success with, or does he just need a fresh voice who hasn't even been here, period?
Maybe. Again, I want to make the point, too. I really don't think his struggles have a lot to do with Sean Ryan. I really don't. And, look, I get sometimes you make the change for the sake of change, but, look, guys, these are people's livelihoods. And, look, Eli Manning's been in this league for a long time. I don't think Sean Ryan telling him the wrong stuff has anything to do with why he had a bad year this year.
And Ryan has had ties within the organization even before he became quarterback's coach. Yeah. He was a wide receiver's coach.
And quality control before that. 201-939-4513. We have three callers on the line. Let's go to them in the order in which the calls were placed. Let's go to Victor in Texas first. Victor, how you been? Victor, you there?
Victor, man, a very few words this morning.
Why don't you put Victor back on hold, Ashman, and we'll try to go back to him in a second, all right? Let's go to our next caller. That's Justin in Westchester. Justin, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, with the owner saying the offense is broken means they're probably going to make a change. And I don't want to see Sullivan, like I said, he's a disciple of Gilbride. He has probably all the same ideas as Gilbride. You know, he's been trained under Gilbride. I'd like to see a fresh face in there, somebody that could help Eli. You know, Eli's probably got 3 to 5 years left, you know, so somebody that's going to be here for the next couple of years that could bring Eli to another level, because I don't think we've seen the best of Eli yet. I think a good coordinator in place, just like what Rivers had with Wisenhunt this year, you know, numbers went up. So I think somebody that's like kind of fresh offense, bring somebody different in and try to change it all up.
Yeah, I think the Ken Wisenhunt example that you brought up, Justin, is a perfect spot right there, because Phillip Rivers was plagued by turnovers the previous season, and it seemed that he wore out that offense. So you bring in Ken Wisenhunt, and also don't overlook the fact Mike McCoy is the former offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. So I think he got two fresh voices, a different perspective, and that helped really, you know, basically turn around his career. So if they do choose to do that with respect to Eli Manning, who knows what's to happen? But it is proven well with respect to other quarterbacks in this
then
league.
Again, you have a guy like Ben Roethlisberger who moved from Bruce Arians to Todd Haley, and that transition not so smooth.
Well, that was something that didn't need to be broken, and they chose to break it because there were some issues with Arians and the relations within the organization.
Do you have any idea where would they go besides Sullivan or anybody else? Is there any big names out there right now?
In terms of offensive coordinators, I mean, if Jason Garrett ever lost his job with Dallas, you know, he has ties here. I think the Giants respect him as an offensive voice. I mean, quite frankly, I think a guy like Josh McDaniels, if he doesn't get a head coaching job, I think it would be a terrific offensive coordinator, somebody from that lineage of the Josh McDaniels system. I love the offense they run there. I mean, you could take a look to see maybe one of Mike McCarthy's disciples in Green Bay who's had a very successful offense. You could take a look there if you want.
Well, you have also think about Rob Chudzinski, who was just fired from the Browns. He's a former offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers,
right,
who, you know, a lot of people question that firing. That's a whole other debate. John, throughout Josh McDaniels, though, he's being rumored to maybe go to Cleveland,
correct,
to replace Chudzinski.
And also, how about this? North Turner, who's a very accomplished offensive coordinator, is now, I still think he's officially employed by the Browns, but they've told their coaches there that you can go find another job if you want.
Well, when a new coach comes in, always likes to change the staff.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So North Turner is another name that's out there, a pretty well-known an offensive coach.
Cool. Hopefully we get something going. So, thank you guys.
Appreciate the call. And by the way, Bill Callahan, the Cowboys offensive coordinator, rumored he might be out at some point this week. So he's a very accomplished offensive coach as well.
Gary Kubiak, former offensive coordinator.
That's
under Mike Shanahan.
One. That's a very good one, actually.
Fired
I like
by
that
the Texans.
One. That's a good one.
However, you wonder if Shanahan gets a job elsewhere, and there's going to be plenty of openings. Would he take Kubiak onto his own staff? You know, that's another thing that could be up
and
in
is someone going to bring in Shanahan right away? I think that's an interesting question. 201-939-4513. Nana is down in Georgia. What's going on, Nana?
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing well.
Great. Okay. I have a few questions.
Sure.
You know, I appreciate Gilbride for all he's done for us. But I just feel like at this point, what will we benefit for, you know, keeping him? You know, I just don't see any good outcome. I think, you know, his job is pretty much done with us. So I just wanted to know, what did you guys think we would benefit from him moving forward if we keep him?
Well, Nana, I think the one thing you would benefit from keeping Kevin Gilbride is continuity with the quarterback. And look, Eli had a bad year this year, and we're not arguing that whatsoever. But there is something to be said for a quarterback playing in the same system. Eli is comfortable in it. Eli knows it. And there is an element of unknown of what's going to happen when Eli plays in a different offensive system. So I think that's the one thing that would really make you hesitate. And the fact that in Kevin Gilbride's 7 or 8 seasons as offensive coordinator, he's finished in the top 10 in every year but 2. So he has a pretty darn good track record.
Okay, but I still don't see, because this, I feel like last year we wasn't able to defend our Super Bowl title. And then we went into this year, started off with 0-6, and then we went on to win 7 games, but the record is getting worse and worse.
Well, I think you need to also take into consideration, Anna, the interceptions, the turnovers skyrocketed this season. It's very hard to win when you turn over the ball at such a quick rate. So, you know, that is not necessarily on Kevin Gilbride. That was more so on the quarterback's decision-making and injuries and having to put guys in that weren't as experienced. And you would assume that if you could fix those things up, in the event you choose to keep Gilbride, the numbers will improve. And getting to your point about it's, you know, not being able to repeat as Super Bowl champs, it's very hard for any team that's won the Super Bowl to bounce back. Look at the Ravens this year. They're not heading to the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think it was Tom Coughlin or Jerry Reese that made that point. I think it was Tom Coughlin that made that point. And look, this league, it's tough. It's tough from year to year to repeat and maintain that success. And I think Garofalo had it the other day. I think 3 out of the last 5 Super Bowl champions did not make the playoffs the following year. So this is the tough business. And you have to stay healthy. You have to make plays in order to continue your success.
Okay, I understand all that. But I just feel like we are too good of a team to only make the playoffs, every 4 years. To me, that's very unacceptable.
That's a fair point.
No, that it's fair, and I think when you look at it, you have a franchise quarterback in the prime of his career, and you miss the playoffs 4 out of 5 years. I think I understand why you would look to make changes after a track record like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just feel like, you know, Eli probably has, what, a good 4 years, you know?
Yeah, give or take.
In his, yeah, so I feel like he should be given, you know, good, you know, coaches around him and players and all that. And, you know, I feel like he has good players minus, you know, the offensive line, because the defense was pretty good, you know, but the offensive line, which to me goes back to Jerry Reese, because I feel like he should have made sure that Eli had all the pieces on the offensive line to keep him up. You know, he was on his back I don't know how many times this season. You know, so I feel like it goes back to Kevin Gilbride and, you know, Jerry Reese.
Nana, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a good one. And look, I think you nailed on to the two things that John Mara touched on yesterday. The lack of success of the draft picks in the middle rounds, and the offense has been poor. I think if you want to take anything out of this season, I think those are the two things you take out of it, and the offensive line being the biggest problem with the offense.
Last season, it was sort of a transitional year where you saw that the veterans who you've relied on over the last few seasons were wearing down, were injury prone, and they chose to hang with some of those veterans and maybe hope that James Brewer would take the next step and a guy like Jim Cordell could be reliable and Justin Pugh would make an immediate impact. And some of them worked out, but others didn't, and that's why it was so difficult to protect Eli Manning. And John Mara mentioned that they banked on things working out. The depth did not prove that way, and that's why they're not going to make the same mistake this offseason, because they're going to make sure that they've got five offensive linemen that, number one, have a good track record when it comes to health and have a good track record in terms of production, whether it be pass protection or run blocking.
Our man Kunal on Twitter says he thought that sounded like Ann in D.C., but I don't think that's the case.
No, I don't think there's a correlation there.
I don't think there is at all.
And we know many of her disguises and aliases. I think we've become experts in that department.
And you can always just sense the underlying nastiness, anger,
yeah,
usually. And I didn't sense that from her. I thought that was a very good call, to be honest.
If that
you.
Was Ann from D.C., then I was going to say she took her medication.
Yeah.
Because she's changed.
No, that's true. I guess Kevin Gilbride, the target, but otherwise a much different, a much more pleasant disposition.
Well, but backed up why perhaps it's smart to part ways with Kevin Gilbride, whereas Ann in D.C. would be like
actual facts and information that,
exactly.
That was solid. Oh, man. 201-939-4513. Victor in Texas is back in the line. Let's get out to him very quickly. Victor, what's up, pal?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
We're doing well, Victor. How about you?
Hey, good. Just wanted to say Happy New Year to you guys. Hope the Christmas went well.
Same to you,
Victor. Victor. Happy New Year.
Yeah, this show is not going to be the same, man, without you guys. I mean, this is something I like to do all day long if I could, to call you guys and talk about football, especially Giants football. looking at what John Mara, I watched all three press conferences. Right?
Oh, no,
we lost
him
again.
What happened?
Must be a bad connection. Uh-oh.
Ashwin, Victor's not going to be happy with you. That's not a good thing.
No respect for
Victor. Victor, call us right back. We'll get you right back up. And right when he's getting to his point, too. So, Victor, give us a call back. I promise you I'll put you right up. You're the first guy up, all right?
Ash, our call screener has quick fingers.
He does, yes. 201-939-4513. It's all right, buddy. Don't worry about it. Let's go to Aiden in Queens. Aiden, what's going on, man? How are you?
How you guys doing?
Doing well, Aiden.
A couple of things on the offseason I want to get your opinion on. In my opinion, the two areas that we need the most help is the back seven and the offensive line, obviously. I know it's a long ways from the draft, but being that we have the number 12 pick, I feel like we can get a great value because there's going to be teams drafting quarterbacks. So basically it's like a top 10, top 8 pick.
You can always get a great player at 12. You just got to pick the right guy.
I think the biggest challenge would be finding that value with the first pick. Is it time for us to finally get that stud linebacker or cornerback, or do you think that everyone's so infatuated with improving the line that they might reach for an offensive lineman there?
Well, I think that the line has always been a big priority for this team, whether it be a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman. I just don't think they're going to take a linebacker because look at the track record. I mean, when was the last time they took a linebacker in the first round? You got to go back all the way to Carl Banks. So I don't see that strategy is going to change. And if they're content with John Beeson, perhaps they figure if they could bring in a free agent, they can at least get away with having the current nucleus at linebacker.
Then again, you could argue last year, what's the chance of them taking an offensive lineman in the first round, because they hadn't done that in so long either. So things change. If the talent lines up, they're open to any position except for maybe a quarterback.
But I would say that I don't think linebacker is the biggest priority this offseason.
No, probably not.
So I don't think it's necessary to take a guy in the first round.
No, I agree.
Appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
All right, Aiden, thanks for the call, man. 201-939-4513. Third time's a charm. Victor in Texas. Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, thanks, guys.
No problem.
I'm going to get through the New Year's. It's not going to mess up my spirit. going back to that press conference with John Mayer, I mean, the guy is straight up. I really like the ownership's decision to come out and just be, you know, up front with the fans. And I totally feel like he's going to make some changes. And when you talked about the his words about the offense, and he's saying it's broken, he's just totally speaking the truth. The offense is broken. That's not necessarily saying that we're going to get rid of Kevin Gilbride, but changes need to be made. And I was totally at peace with what he told the fans about that. But one thing that was poignant about what he said was, why did it take 3 years to figure out how Jarrell Jernigan can play? That's a player development type coach, and a lot of people get kind of mixed up, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong. Is that a Tom Coughlin or is that a Kevin Gilbride decision that, hey, this guy can play, and I want to play?
I think that's the coaching staff not seeing enough from him either in the preseason or in practice. And quite frankly, again, Jarrell Jernigan's been hurt a lot his first 2 years too.
Yeah, definitely. That's true. And looking at, you know, a lot of speculation with the coaches and changes, Mike Sullivan is a guy that comes in, you know, comes to mind. Giants like, you know, to be with people they're comfortable with, but I don't think that's a good move, even though it would probably work for Eli. I think long term, I think it needs to change. Just like you said, it's the same thing as having Kevin Gilbert there. But if we do make moves with coaches, and being at the off season is just so short, and you know, coaches have minimal time with players, that has to happen quick. It has to happen very quick so the guys can get in and learn the new offense. And lastly, you know, with all the players we have coming back, or excuse me, all the players we have in free agency, unrestricted free agents, restricted free agents, what is the priority for us to keep? And if we're looking to go out inside of free agency, who do you think is going to intrigue us in 2014? And with our draft pick, the number one thing you think we need on draft pick, I think it's offensive line, but I don't think the Giants are going to go offensive lineman at number 12.
Well, you know what? And I know people are going to hate me for this because it's going to be a somewhat general answer. You know what I want at number 12? I want a Pro Bowl caliber player. I don't care where he's playing. If you get me a Pro Bowl player at number 12 in the draft, I'm going to be happy, and he's going to help the team win football games. The last thing I want to do, Victor, is reach for an offensive lineman there that's going to be a solid guy and good when another guy that could be a Pro Bowler is available at a different position. I want a playmaker. I want a difference maker when you're picking 12th in the draft, and I think that has to be the top priority.
And you want somebody, you know, the Giants usually pick somebody, you know, for the best player available. How about best player available for need? I mean, it's kind of something that's kind of awkward, but I want to, just like you said, I want to see the best player available there at a certain position, whether it's a cornerback, whether it's a linebacker. I want somebody that's going to be a Pro Bowler, that's going to do something for us years to come.
Well,
I appreciate it, guys. Happy New Year, man.
You got
to
be the same to you.
Thank you for your persistence.
And the other thing that you need to keep in mind if you want the Giants to go in the direction of drafting an offensive lineman, and we've talked about this at times, tackles tend to go very high in the first round.
That's correct.
Now, right now, is the biggest necessity tackle? Now, many Giants fans would say yes, given Will Beatty's injury and his play. However, you also need to take into consideration the money they have locked up in him and Pugh fitting in very nicely at right tackle. So I would say the biggest need is guard, John, than necessarily tackle.
Inside. I think whether it's a center or a guard, I think that's where your biggest need is on the offensive line.
So I don't think you draft a guard with the 12th overall pick. You either wait till the later rounds or you go free agency.
And look, based on how deep this draft is supposedly supposed to be, you should be able to get a guard or center that can start for you week one with your second round pick. Should be able to if you pick the right guy.
And there's always the option of bringing back Kevin Booth to at least solidify one guard spot. And therefore, maybe you bring in a free agent at the other guard, but then you have to determine what you want to do at center. And maybe that's something that they decide to draft. Who knows?
And again, deciding and talking about who they're going to pick in the first round is going to be dependent on what they do in free agency. So we really have to wait and see here, guys, before we talk about who the Giants are going to draft. But I'll say it again, and I can't stress this enough, and I'm going to drive people nuts all offseason with this. I know I am. It's going to be fun. 12, give me a difference maker. I want a guy that's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. And you're going to say he's going to win his matchup with whomever he's going up against every single week. Besides maybe safety, where the team is set with a Will Hill and an Onchel role, every single other position on the field, I'm open to drafting. It could be a D-tackle to play next to Colin Jenkins. It could be a defensive end to rush the passer. It can be a cornerback to play across from Prince. It can be a linebacker to play next to John Beeson if a guy's a real impact player. It could be an offensive lineman. It can be a great wide receiver. It could be, well, maybe not a running back.
I thought you were going to say tight end, too.
No, you know what? If you can pick the next great franchise tight end and you really believe that this guy is going to be Jimmy Graham and can block and can be a two-way guy that's going to catch 70 passes for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns every year, I'll take a tight end there. I'm okay with that. If he's going to be that great of a player, fine. No problem with it. Done.
I think it's very risky when you take a tight end, even if you think he has true potential. You look at some of the guys that went in the early rounds this year, and they weren't necessarily anything to write home about. I mean, Tyler Eifert was an attractive piece out of Notre Dame, and he hasn't necessarily made a huge impact on that Bengals offense. And I know they have Gresham, so they have two tight ends, but, you know, I think if the Bengals could go back, they may have been able to go in a different direction.
But again, I'm not saying pick a tight end for the sake of picking a tight end. If you know this guy is going to be a star and your personnel people tell you he's going to be a star, I have no problem picking a tight end. No problem at all.
I would go in a safer position, meaning a position where you also have a greater need, but you know that you can get an impactful player, or you've had done that in previous seasons. And you know what? For the most part, you know, outside of maybe the David Wilson pick, they've done pretty good with their first-round pick in recent history.
Though, Nixon, Pierre-Paul now, we'll see how their careers is going.
Well, but
end.
I guess I should say from the immediate situation.
Fair.
Meaning Knicks came in, was an impact player. JPP came in, was an impact player. Yes, you're right. 3 or 4 years down the road, you wish you could have more out of them. But they came in, they adjusted well, you got good value. You just want to have long-lasting value. That's the biggest problem.
Same with the Kenny Phillips. Almost the same situation there as well. Of course, he had an injury situation, which was a little bit different. Aaron Ross, give you a little bit, though. I think you would have liked to get a little bit more out of your first-round pick with Aaron Ross.
Prince
well.
Is starting to develop.
Right. No question. 201-939-4513. We haven't heard from Dave in Rochester in a while. Dave, what's going on?
Fellas, good morning. But, Johnny, I got to tell you, I'm a little upset with you.
Why?
Yeah, I'm kind of sad.
Why?
Because I listen to the show all the time, and I heard a couple of things. Now, I've been a caller since 2007, 2008, when you were on that other show. The guy that looks like B. Arthur.
What do
you know, inside, the guy with the ferret on his lip. Insight. Eisen's Insight.
Oh,
that's
Michael
tight.
Eisen.
Yeah. Man, he looks like he should be driving a 7-8 Nova with Tanya Hardinson in the back seat, doesn't he? Anyway.
Oh,
anyway, there's a couple times I do my Dottino jokes, and you said that I had an uncomfortable man crush on Dottino. Which
I feel
I don't
like
know
it
how
is.
You can have a,
well, Dave, perhaps man crush is the wrong word, but I believe
all
the
right.
word obsession would be appropriate.
That's the other one, but I don't know if you can have a man crush on an 84-year-old man, okay? Because that doesn't end. So I'm a little hurt.
That's
I was
okay.
just a little hurt. I feel like you're, you know, making fun of me, but you know that's what the show's about. It's about the Giants and the fans and making fun of the Tino.
It's about
that's what we do.
It's about having fun, Dave. And whenever you call, we certainly have a lot of fun, and we appreciate it.
Well, Dave, just one quick question. I know John was using the word obsession and everything, but how is the Facebook page going with respect to the white pants? We want to make sure that you're doing your due diligence, at least running the Facebook page. So we wanted an update.
It has been a little slow because of the holidays, but I promise we got some good stuff coming up in 2014. We got the Shave Dottino back contest coming up this year. There's all kinds of great stuff coming up. So
that's good. We want more activities.
Now, Dave, I think here's a good question. If you were to buy Paul Dottino a Christmas gift, what would it be?
Man, that's a good question. you got me on that one. I don't know. Something with tanning or hair. You know, it looks like he does look European lately. Isn't
right,
well, bad? He's got this.
Dave,
look,
here's
like a nice vest.
What about a self tanning kit?
Yeah.
I think that would be appropriate.
Now Paul
would
argue. Paul would argue there's no need for a self tanning kit because he's self tanning just using the sun.
Well, but in the winter months, the sun is not that strong in the Northeast.
Okay, so Dave, here's what I want
you
to do.
Keep that in mind.
Your next addition to the Paul Dottino White Pants Facebook page needs to be a nice list of things that he received for Christmas. That's what I'm going to be looking for.
All right, you got it.
Plus, remember, now he's going to have a little bit more time on his hands so you could get creative in terms of what Paul Dottino does as a hobby in the offseason.
And, Lance, also, you had a request, too. You want to change that Facebook page to a fan page, right?
Well, I think that everybody should be able to like the page as opposed to becoming friends with the page. So
yeah,
I think we need to work on that, Dave. We need to increase the number of viewers and the number of fans who can go to the page and really, you know, take this to a whole other level.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it works, but I think there's a way to turn it from a regular page into a fan page. So I think maybe we need to work on that next too, Dave.
We may have to tweak it for 2014.
You got it.
Has he seen the page? Does he know about it? Do you know?
I think Lance and I purposely did not tell about him, considering how mentally fragile
yes,
he was based on the Giants' 7-9 season.
Man.
We didn't want to push him over the edge while the season was still going on. Now that the season's over, maybe we can try to introduce him to some modern technology.
See, you have to go through sensitivity training, Dave, when you work with Paul Dottino, because you never know what you're going to get out of him, depending on what you bring up.
No, I know last week, I think it was Wednesday, man, he was brittle on the show. I think Anita wasn't on the show with him, and the fans were beating him up, and I thought he was going to cry.
He's come close to that, I'll tell you that.
Dave, we appreciate it. You got anything else on the team, or that's all you got?
That's all I got, of course. But hey, I love you guys. It's been a great year. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a great new year, Dave. We appreciate it as always. Dave in Rochester providing nothing but entertainment through us since 2012.
You can always rely on some good material from Dave from Rochester, and we're hoping that he takes it to a whole other level in 2014 because picture of Paul Dottino in his white pants may have to go down as the highlights of this 2013 campaign, and I know that's not saying much based on the product on the field. Another clarification, since we hear from a lot of our listeners and fans on Twitter, the speculation can be put to rest that Nana from Georgia is Ann from D.C. Why? Because she has clarified that on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yes, she just tweeted,
At
IBleedBlue10.
Is that a hashtag Giants chat?
No, it was not, but it was a direct tweet to you and I.
Oh, very
nice.
So
if you take a look at your interaction page, I feel like I'm giving directions on social media
today.
Dave about changing to a like page. I mean, this is unreal this morning.
Unlike you, who's only concerned with his own Twitter page and his own interaction, I'm actually monitoring hashtag Giants
I do
chat,
both.
The Giants Twitter channel. So, you know, some of us are team players. Other of us just worry about our own personal
I do a combination of both. Well, some people reach out directly. Others use the hashtag Giants chat. Well, we're doing a combination of both. Some people can multitask.
What's your follower count looking like these days, by the way?
It's in good shape. I mean, we don't need to worry about the numbers here.
Okay,
what do you think? We're tied to the success of an individual based on how many Twitter followers they have?
So, in other words, not enough success for you to give the number. Hello?
I mean, we're in good shape. We'll leave it at that.
201-939-4513. We lost Roldy before. Let's bring him in. Roldy and Bayshore. What's up, Roldy?
Hey, good morning, John. Good morning, Lance. How you guys doing?
Doing well,
great, Roldy. How are you?
Good. Real quick, I just want the fans to stop blaming Kevin Gilbride. Yes, do I get upset at some of the, you know, play callings that he does? Yes, you know. But it's not Kevin Gilbride's fault. It's the players that has not been executing the plays that was designed, you know. The only thing I want, you know, I hope we keep up Kevin Gilbride. I'm one of the guys that's saying that, you know, I would like to keep the offensive coordinator because he's been there for a long time with Kevin, with Tom Coughlin. The only thing I would like him to add in his offense is quick, you know, slant, but, you know, plays, a better screenplay. You know, I want to see more screenplays next year, you know what I mean? Because most teams that does it, they do a good job at it, and they gain a couple of yards. And I would like to see the Giants do that.
Well, Roldy, I'll tell you this. Not meaning to cut you off. If they could get one screenplay, if they can execute just one, that may be a step in the right direction.
They did throw back to Andre Brown.
They did. They did have one. It wasn't the prettiest screenplay in the world.
It was a nice
one. But it was okay.
Throwback.
You're really putting it up on a pedestal.
Well, now you're getting
greedy.
I mean,
the first screenplay in 10 years.
And I want to see a more consistent screenplay.
There we go. See,
Roldy's
a little bit more realistic.
Hey,
my
expectations have been set extremely low by the types of screen passes I've seen over the last 3 years. If I get a nice throwback screen that goes for a first down on a 3rd and 13, you know what? To hell with you guys. I'm getting excited about it, all right?
No, I want something better.
I'm signing with Roldy on this one.
And And just like I was saying, I feel like we shouldn't make any change in the offensive, you know, coordinator. He's been here a long time with Tom Coughlin. Coughlin, you know, like I was saying yesterday, you know, has maybe 1 or 2 years to go. He's not going to want to make a change in the offensive, you know, coordinator. I just feel like, you know, if anything, we should add a little bit more, you know, quick plays, you know, like 5, 10, you know, short passes, you know, screens. That's all I really want to see. I mean, you've seen what happened. I think you were saying this, Lance, about a couple of weeks ago. You've seen what happened in Pittsburgh. They changed the offensive coordinator, and it's been a little bit tough for Ben Roethlisberger. I don't want that to happen to Eli Manning. That's the coordinator he knows, and he's been working with him. I just feel like if anything, it's the players that's not executing the offensive plays that Kevin Gilbride is drawing up.
I
get upset at times at his plays? Yeah, but it's the players that got to execute the plays, and that's really all that I have. Have a happy new year.
Same
and
to you, Roldy.
You know, hopefully we can have a better year next year.
Thanks, Roldy.
Appreciate the
call, Roldy.
I was
going to ask you, can you come in Thursday?
Yeah, I can come in Thursday.
All right. So why don't we just fly through the rest of the week?
Fair enough.
Sound like a
that
plan?
Works for me. Absolutely.
And I'll bother Dottino next week for something.
All right.
I want to give Dottino a couple days here to kind of deflate after the season's over. I don't want to rush him back in here. I feel like he needs a couple days.
I think he needs a few weeks.
I'm making a mental health decision for Paul Dottino right now.
I think months, maybe a better use of the term. I'm surprised you're saying he needs a few days.
Well, he might need...
Been a rough season for Paul Dottino from a psychological standpoint.
You know what, though? He actually came through pretty well. He really did. I thought it would be worse.
Well, I think that brief winning streak saved him a little bit.
And finished the
season.
Got
the blood transfusion.
Winning 7 out of 10 to close out the year.
Got the spirits up.
Yeah, I agree.
But another season without a playoff berth is very tough for Dottino to swallow because it's not the same when you're breaking down film of the Carolina Panthers and looking at the X's and O's as opposed to when you're breaking down the Giants. I guess the benefit in all of this is he's probably going to get an extreme head start on scouting all of the college talent so that he can be well-versed on draft jargon.
I bet she has the projector hooked up right now.
Oh.
He's got the fax machine up and running. He's ready to go.
He's got all the TV monitors going. He's also got some highlights running on the computer.
Oh, you think he's figured out how to watch highlights on the computer?
Oh, I'm sure he's advanced enough in this day and age. He hangs out with enough young people that he should be able to stay up on things.
I'm sure our tech guru, Neil Shah, could teach him how to do it, too.
Yes, clearly. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of intellectual conversations during the course of the offseason. Season ends, these people tend to disappear. It's amazing. So much things on their plate now.
By the way, should we do our, we got 8 minutes to go to 11 o'clock. Go to 11. Do you have our final pick standings?
Well, I did. I sent it out. You didn't get
did
the
you?
Email? I emailed it to everybody that took part in the competition.
When did you send it out?
Sent it out the night of the final game. I think I sent it out Monday night, I believe.
Oh, so
right
last night.
Right after the final. Well, no, there was no game on Monday night. I actually may have sent it out Sunday night,
really?
Believe it or not.
It must have got lost
we'll
in all
look
the
emails.
That's my fault. I apologize.
The reason why, I don't know if we want to talk about it, is because the guy that we mentioned actually won it.
Good job by Paulie Dodds.
By a slight percentage.
Oh, really?
I should mention.
Did Dan Salomo make a late run?
Well, Dan had the most wins during the course of the season,
right.
But we went based on winning percentage because some
Paul
people
missed.
Decided that some weeks they didn't want to
well,
make
picks.
Well,
here's the question. Do you want to carry this into the postseason?
We could do that. Assuming
I think
that
should.
Everybody stays on top of it.
Nah, well, are you going
to I think
on
we
top
should have
it?
A separate competition for the playoffs. I don't think we should do in addition to the regular season.
So
just
in other
be a
words,
new competition.
You're so far behind. You want
I'm
to
not
make that
sure far that behind.
I
mean,
has a chance.
Everybody was close in winning percentage. It wasn't that far apart. But with the playoffs, I think that we should maybe do a new competition.
We'll
I think that would make sense.
I'm okay with that.
Where maybe even somebody makes some predictions on who they think would have the Super Bowl matchup.
So I guess it's Paul, Dan, you finish in third, I finish in fourth. Neil
you finish in third, I finish in
I finish
fourth.
Ahead of you?
It was a quick reversal.
Oh, how about that?
You had two extra wins, and the winning percentage
was third straight year. Finish it ahead of Lance.
Well, you did actually do pretty good in this final week. 14-1 you went this final week.
Did I go 14-1?
Yeah, you got one game wrong.
See, that's how you finish.
Yeah, that's how you close. I know.
Tom
I figured you were going to say something
like that. Tom Coughlin talks about finishing.
Yep.
That's how you finish.
That's how you finish.
14-1.
That's how you finish in third place. Congratulations.
That's how you finish ahead of Lance Meadow.
If there's only one person who sets the bar so high, clearly it's you. Never have I seen so much excitement over a third-place finish.
Well, I beat you.
Hey, if you can hang your hat on that, I guess that's something.
It's better than not hanging my hat on that. It's better than hanging my hat on being our
last time I checked, you can hang the hat on a hook. It always works. Well, it's very suitable.
You can't win the pick competition every year, so...
Well, we did have more people involved in the pick competition. Usually it's you and I.
But I won the fantasy competition last year, too.
That's right. And that clearly lasted extremely long. Notice how we carried that over into this season.
Not too well.
What a tremendous project that turned out to be.
Yeah, the guru did not take care of that.
No. The guru had a lot more things on the plate this season, apparently.
Oh, man.
And we talked that up a great deal.
What's your take here? Gut feeling. By the end of the week, will we have coaching changes?
I think they're going to wait till maybe a Monday announcement.
You
think? I think they're going to carry out the meetings through Friday.
I think they'll wait till after the holiday. I think we'll get it at the end of the week.
Friday or Monday. That's what I think. I don't think we're going to hear it on Thursday right after the
So you do think there will be some changes?
I think they'll probably make at least one change.
I agree.
I don't think big-time changes, but they're going to make probably one tweak to this coaching staff.
I know a lot of people, think there's like a good 80% chance Gilbride goes. I think it's closer to 50-50. At this point, so to be honest with you.
Well, I think that, as Mara mentioned, John, he has his viewpoint, Reese has his viewpoint, and Coughlin has his. That's why they all need to hammer it out in a meeting. And Tom, as we know, he is very loyal to his coaching staff. You have to give him that. And he's probably going to fight for all of the guys, despite what Mara and Reese say.
And he will have a very loud voice in those meetings. They take what Coach Coughlin says very seriously.
Well, especially if they have a great deal of confidence in him as a head coach and they want him back, they're not just going to say it's this way or the highway. I think they're going to try to hash it out.
And, you know, one thing we didn't talk about, and we'll touch on this more on Thursday, John Mara was asked by Ralph Vacchiano. It was a very good question. It's something we've talked about a lot in the morning show during the course of that press conference. Whether or not he'll talk to Tom Coughlin about his future plans and how much longer he wants to coach. And John Mara was kind of like, you know what? It's almost tough to develop an exit strategy in the NFL, but that conversation will take place, and maybe that'll affect how they want to handle this year as well.
Though if you read between the lines with what Tom Coughlin mentioned, it was quite funny how he said he's a relatively young coach compared to the rest of the coaches in the NFL.
Yeah, so please, anybody that thinks he's thinking about retiring anytime soon?
Not happening.
Not happening.
Well, he admitted that he did not become a head coach until he was 45 in this league. So, you know, he doesn't have the type of track record and resume that a lot of other NFL coaches, and he's still enjoying himself. So, you know, maybe he's going to go even past 70 for all we know.
And what the heck is Tom Coughlin going to do if he's at home every day not working?
His life is built around the NFL day-to-day schedule.
His whole life. He would drive his wife nuts. Judy would kill him.
He seems to be a lifer.
Yeah, for sure. No question.
And you know what? If he decides that he doesn't want to coach anymore, I could see him being a consultant or maybe having, I don't know if he'd be a front office guy. I don't think he would like that desk job, day-to-day type atmosphere. But I could see him being a consultant to maybe an offensive coordinator or a head coach to some degree.
I do not. I also see him doing a lot of stuff with his J Fund charity. I think that'll be his next call.
But he could do that and still keep himself busy with NFL stuff.
I don't see him being a media guy.
No, not at all. I do not see him translating to the broadcast booth.
No, I'll tell you what. If he decided to do it, I think he'd be really good at it because he's funny. If you get Coach alone and you know he kind of just talks football and lightens up a little bit, Coach is funny. He really is. He's a funny guy and. He would be very enthusiastic. He loves the game. I just don't think that's his cup of tea.
Oh, a weekly spot, if anything. We're not looking at a day-to-day broadcasting job.
Well, maybe, you know, he could be a studio guy for one of the networks on the weekends. Something like that. I can see him doing NFL Network work.
That's something that appeases to him, absolutely.
But, again, I don't think that's his type of thing. But I think if he did it, I think he'd be really good at it.
He has the personality for it. I know it doesn't always show, but if you get him in a situation and the atmosphere is right, he definitely does open up. And he knows his X's and O's. I think that goes without saying.
No question.
I don't think we need to look past him on that.
And you know he do his homework. It's not like he's one of these guys going to mail it and show up and talk in platitudes. He's not going to be Warren Sapp. He's going to come in, do his homework, and do his thing.
That's true. Maybe you could take a lesson from him. Show up, do your homework.
Wow. That is a shot.
Just saying.
What is that? That was unwarranted.
Well, you opened the door.
Who doesn't do their homework? Wow.
Well, I don't want you to slack off now that it's the off season.
I don't even want to close the show anymore. I'm hurt.
Oh, you don't want to close the show.
I'm insulted. You closed the show.
We'll be able to regroup and recover.
Mr. Big
later
Shot?
Later this week.
Wow, not doing homework.
No, I'm just saying. Listen, you could always learn something.
Well, yeah.
From a guy does his fair share of homework.
No one ever, you know, knows everything.
Well, the Nuggets did fall off this season, if we're going to be fair.
What do you mean?
The Nuggets did fall off. Usually Tuesdays was a day where it would consistently be full of Nuggets and all
the
good stats.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the time that was on
99% of the
Tuesdays,
time it was, I'm leaving the show and I'll see you mañana.
Well, that's because I didn't get back in time, or I did the full show and we didn't have our meeting until later in the day, so I didn't have the Nuggets ready yet.
So it threw off the pace of the show. That's what I'm getting to. This is just something.
So the homework was done. It's just not on the time table that Lance Medal required.
Absolutely. See, now you're reading between the lines and putting A and B together.
I see.
That's what it comes down to.
All right. Happy New Year.
Same to you, and same to our listeners and callers.
Now, what's your big New Year's plans?
To get some sleep. How about that?
I know. I'm actually 100% on board
with
that.
That is my big plan.
I'm with you. And by the way, later in the week, we got to hang out at Lance Medal's apartment on Sunday night. We're going to talk about that, too. So. Well, stay tuned.
Oh, teasing the audience
awesome.
For the latter part of
the
week.
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot to touch on. A lot to talk about.
Really?
Oh,
this is going to be interesting.
Yeah,
I'd love
you.
To hear the insight that you bring to the table.
Oh, and we'll talk about that all week long here on Giants.com.
Oh, boy. That's going to be a whole new show.
Everybody, though, Happy New Year. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for chiming in on Twitter. By the way, by far, our best year with Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. You guys made this show great. We appreciate it. The show's nothing without the fans, all you really knowledgeable fans out there chiming in, adding to the show, really making it great. We thank you very much for your listening, for downloading the podcast, for participating live. Just an excellent job.
Absolutely. The interaction was magnificent this whole season, and that's what makes this show what it is. It's all about the fan interaction. A number of them have voiced that during the course of the season. You know, this is your outlet to voice your opinions on the team, and we appreciate it, John and I, because we're able to bounce off of what you bring to the table. So we hope that you'll bring it even during the course of the offseason, because the show is going to continue. It will be shortened a little, but we'll still be here.
Exciting, energetic, but also intelligent, and we love that from you guys out there in Giants land. Thanks for listening. Great 2013. Let's make 2014 even better. The show will continue. Lance, myself, Paul, Anita, etc., as the offseason moves along. For Lance Medal, I'm John Schmelk. Everybody have a great day. Have a happy new year. Be safe. Have fun with your friends and family. Don't do anything Lance Medal wouldn't do.
No, absolutely.
And we'll see you on Thursday morning, everybody. Have a good one.